Welcome to the 2012 Federal Executive Forum Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's show will discuss secure cloud computing initiatives in the federal government. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we will discuss progress being made in secure cloud computing in the federal government. With me today on the show are Dave Mihelsik, the Chief Technology Officer at DISA, Adrian Gardner, the Chief Information Officer at NASA Goddard, Hayden Land, Vice President Engineering and Chief Technology Officer, Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions Civil, Steve Charles, Co-Founder and Executive Vice President of the IMIX Group, and Chris Ensi, the Director of Government Solutions at SafeNet Incorporated. We're talking cloud. Let's open up by asking each panelist to tell us a little bit about your role in some of the initiatives with cloud computing at your respective agency. Let's start with Dave over at DISA. Dave, what are some of the role you play in some of the specific initiatives you have ongoing?
So as the CTO of DISA, I'm overall responsible for all of the technical strategies. I work directly for our director, Lieutenant General Hawkins, and help him formulate his priorities. And in particular, I believe that this topic of cloud and offering innovative new cloud services needs to be one of our director's top priorities. In addition to that, I provide the technical oversight of all of our initiatives and programs in the agency, and I have deputy chief technology officers who work in each one of our technology areas, such as computing, communications, command and control applications development, who help me with that oversight on a daily basis. In terms of initiatives, we have a broad portfolio of cloud initiatives that I hope is going to get more broad in the near future, including an infrastructure as a service offering, rapid access computing environment, which offers infrastructure on demand for test and development applications. We have several software as a service offerings, including DoD's Joint Enterprise Email, a Joint Enterprise Portal service, Forge.mil, which is a community cloud development support capability. And we recently announced and have achieved IOC on a platform as a service offering called Stax, which offers Java and .NET application and web server environments to our customers.
Wow, cool. Lots of stuff to talk about there. Lots going on. I guess when you think of this, you have such a broad community of customer base to address that when you get into some of the issues, maybe challenges you have with addressing such a broad base. Adrian Gardner over at NASA, I'm reading a lot about you, Adrian. Every time I take a look at some of the trade journals, there's a positive story about a lot of great stuff you're doing over there, and it mentions a lot of things you're doing in cloud. Can you tell us about your role
and some of the initiatives?
Yeah. So at NASA, we have a sort of a NASA cloud service, and it originally stood up with two centers, Ames Research Center and Goddard. Mm-hmm. And we looked at really trying to start at looking at computational science as far as using cloud.
Right.
And so one of the things that we've done is really focus on the needs of our scientists and engineers. At my center, we have more than 10,000 scientists and engineers that I directly support on a daily basis. So really an agile environment, very difficult, very diverse. Right. But really trying to give them additional capabilities from a standpoint of compute and storage. So a couple of things that we've been focusing on, one is sort of an IT storefront where we'd actually virtualize the ability to go in and access compute all the way from the desktop through the supercomputer and using sort of a cloud,
right.
Cloud in the middle of that between sort of the supercomputer and the hardened and virtual data centers to create a whole range of compute that they'd have access to. The other part of it is really now looking at it as sort of a service broker, so they could quickly, agilely move from their desktop all the way to high-performance computing in real time.
Wow.
And so that's a huge opportunity for us. The other thing is we have a lot of big data. So we've created sort of a data storage cloud to really create more capability and more scale for our scientists and engineers as we put up big data sets and make them accessible to the community at large. And so those are a couple of the efforts that are underway that we have at NASA. And as you stated, it's an exciting time to kind of be there and be part of this huge change.
Yeah, and the exciting things it sounds like a lot of mission and operational oriented things. You know, sometimes when we hear cloud, we hear about, email and some of the standard things, but you're looking at it for actual mission operations and things like that right now. So that sounds exciting. Hayden Land over Lockheed Martin. How does a company like Lockheed position to, support and assist your government customers in what they're trying to do as we see the way the sort of markets are constantly expanding and changing and new players come, new players go? But how's Lockheed positioning to help your customer base?
In my role as the
engineering lead and CTO at performance and innovation. So it's a great opportunity to innovate in areas such as cloud and deploy it in production environments. Mm-hmm. So it's been a real great journey. That started in 2008, where we had our vision and our approach defined. We had our first production cloud deployment in the government industry in first quarter 2009, and had many since then. Mm-hmm. That includes private, hybrid, and public where appropriate. So a diverse portfolio. I think the appetite for cloud is starting to increase, in particular with the budget pressures, customers.
A lot of the shared first initiative.
Yes, exactly. Shared first, future first, and the original cloud first policy.
Right.
We focus on the infrastructure as a service initially, storage, processing power, bandwidth, mm-hmm. and work up to the platform level, offering databases and middleware,
right.
and then ultimately the SaaS layer, software as a service,
right.
for VDI solutions, VoIP solutions, email solutions, and selective mission applications. It's key in our strategy that you got to have the right mix of people, process, and technology mm-hmm. focused on these key areas. And when we think cloud, we think security.
Right.
They both go hand in hand.
Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to get to that point, because I think, you know, in the early days, that was one of the big, sort of caution flags. But I think that attitude has changed dramatically, and we'll drill down on that a little later on the show.
Yeah, wonderful.
Terrific, thanks. Steve Charles over the IMX Group now. I think of IMX as representing lots of different companies. Could you tell us a little bit about your role with cloud and your positioning and on all this stuff?
Sure, absolutely. We do represent hundreds of technology companies, helping them grow their business in the government sector, and cloud applications are becoming an increasingly large part of that. At the infrastructure layer, I would be remiss in not mentioning Brocade, our sponsor today.
Mm-hmm.
Ethernet mesh, high-speed communications between the servers and the storage. So part of making cloud happen is the infrastructure in the data center and making that data center so that it can scale up and scale down.
Right.
That requires communication, and that's what Brocade and some of this mesh technology is all about. But we're also at the software layer, the software as a service layer. We've had a number of fascinating projects involving data center consolidation and consolidating 14 different data centers, actually, and the DHS cybercrimes unit into one major data center with a failover capability, allowing agents across the country to actually share information in ways that they couldn't before. Mm-hmm. Less cost, higher response.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things going on out there. You know,
exactly.
It's just that we get overwhelmed with the things in the press that sort of take away from the technology advances that are really taking place all across government. Chris Enzi over at SafeNet. Now, I think of SafeNet, one of the leaders in reading about them, and I used them when I was still in the government, as being end-to-end encryption and authentication. And I guess cloud for you guys becomes a great opportunity, because I think in the cloud environments, end-to-end security of the data becomes an important issue. Can you tell us a little bit about your role and how you see yourself SafeNet playing in this area?
Certainly. Well, my role is Director of Government Solutions. I provide kind of a big picture view of how we can take all those different pieces that you mentioned from end to end and work with federal systems integrators, our partners in federal government and defense and intel spaces, and develop solutions that they can take and gain confidence going into the cloud environment. And we do this predominantly through our pedigree of data encryption background.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing this for 28 years.
Right.
And as we've evolved, cloud has become just the next evolution of that. So we provided a number of different ways to adopt new technologies, which have given our clients the ability to confidently go into a cloud and start to build architectures that are multifaceted, multi-layered, and ready to be multi-tenant without some of the risks that were kind of preconceived when we first started talking about cloud.
Right. Right. You brought the security issue up. Let's jump right to that security issue and get into it, drill into it a little bit, because in thinking what you just said there, Chris, it seems to me that over the years we've put in place so many patch products and so many, problems occur, we fix them, problems occur, we fix them. And I would argue that in some environments, complex environments, it's hard to even know what you have anymore in terms of total security. Is cloud an opportunity to sort of like turn a new page and address this thing holistically? And perhaps, because in reality we know that unless this budget, in the budget climate, it's going to be very difficult to implement new things unless we can take out some old things that are perhaps costly and have high maintenance costs and so forth. Adrian, is what I'm saying making any sense to you? I mean, is that a way to look at this thing from a security perspective?
I mean, it absolutely makes sense. You really need to get beyond the focus of cloud being a technology and more about it being a change in the business philosophy and business strategy of organizations. Mm-hmm. And so it really gives you an opportunity to look back at legacy systems and the way in which they're secured. How do you stage them for the cloud? Can you put security wrappers around them prior to going in? You'd obviously do that. You look at the FedRAMP process. You know, it's still maturing. Right. I think it's the right thing. I mean, so, you know, when you're really going to have third-party review of all the service providers, I think that's going to really be a step forward. So hopefully it's going to get to a point where we have a level playing field of security and we have a good understanding of the risk that we're assuming as we move into the cloud and actually when we operate in the cloud.
Right. Dave, what do you think at DISA? How do you look at that security question in cloud? Are you guys addressing security differently now that you're looking at cloud?
So we view cloud as really an opportunity to improve security as well as efficiency and effectiveness at the same time. Henry Ford once said, my peers tell me you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. I say put them all in one basket and watch it very closely. So cloud gives us that opportunity. And as we move to these standard cloud offerings, we have the ability to standardize on operating system configuration so that we know we have a secure OS that underlies our infrastructure as a service offerings. We have the ability to ensure we have mechanisms built in to rapidly patch. We have the ability to implement standard identity and authentication mm-hmm. management solutions, which is really a key to our cloud offerings. We've partnered with the Defense Manpower Data Center mm-hmm. and have basically taken their personnel databases and used that to create an identity database that's used for login to all of our cloud-based applications, and those capabilities are available to our customers. As they bring their applications, both Greenfield and Legacy, to our cloud offerings, they can leverage these identity and authentication management services. So I really think cloud is an opportunity as opposed to an impediment for security.
Yeah, it's funny you bring identity up, you know, because it seems like just about every show we have, somewhere we hit the identity management issue. And the authentication issue has become so important, everything I think that's going to be going forward. Let's go to Chris over at SafeNet. Since you are, the company is focused solely on security, are you looking at cloud any different, or do you have strategies for cloud security?
Absolutely. So cloud has a lot of different layers, and especially when you talk to the cloud service providers who have a number of different issues they need to tackle. So one, they have administrators, which have to have high assurance access. Right. So identity is a big deal in that case. So you have a lot of different types of strong identity tokens and certificate-based types of things you want to bring into that environment to help secure it at those critical levels. And then there's also the deployment architecture. You know, there's the stuff that underpins each tenant that comes into that cloud service provider and provides them with the services that they need and allows them to kind of build the data center in the cloud. And those folks have additional concerns about identity as well as protecting data from the other people that are in that same cloud environment. So identity, data protection, all kind of come into play there. And you know, key management and data encryption are foundational elements. And when you pair that with strong authentication, you then get this opportunity. I think it was said best earlier that this is the opportunity to reset the stage for how we approach security. It's a whole different methodology than what we did with the legacy architectures that were out there, the kind of legacy security models that we've come to be familiar with. So this gives us a whole new opportunity to go forward and kind of change the game for ourselves.
Right. You know, I think we're waiting. I think people are going to be comfortable when they know they're signing on and going to the cloud and they don't have to worry about the security thing. Mm-hmm. They have the confidence in knowing that the data is secure in their transactions. Hayden over at Lockheed, how do you address that security? You brought it up in your initial comments that it's one of the top priority issues. How are you addressing it in terms of looking at your strategies for helping the customers?
Well, for 17 years running, being the number one federal IT provider, cyber is instrumental in everything we do. And cloud has provided us, our partners, our customers, an opportunity to fundamentally reimagine information technology, but in a secure fashion. When we engage initially, we leverage a cloud readiness assessment concept mm-hmm. to look at both the infrastructure layer, the platform layers, the application layer, and data layer, and putting the right type of cloud in the appropriate scenario, whether it's private, hybrid, or public, like you said. So I think that's key up front to ensure you've planned out your cloud strategy and execute it based on the classification that you're trying to respond to. We've also stood up a world-class security intelligence center that supports both cloud and legacy environments and have opened three next-generation cyber innovation labs, one in Maryland, one in Farnborough, United Kingdom.
And these available to government agencies?
Yes, they certainly are for joint experimentations, available for our partners, demonstrations, and some of the folks in the room here have leveraged that in the past. And we just opened a similar lab in Canberra, Australia. Oh. So we're looking at this not only domestically, but globally and supporting our allies.
Yeah, I guess everything when you talk cloud, the global thing is going to come into play more and more and more. I mean, the boundaries disappear. Steve, how about over to MixGroup? How about the security question as it relates to cloud? And how do you guys view that? And how do you work with your companies that are addressing that issue?
Sure. Well, the exciting thing for us is that there are new companies, new technologies emerging constantly.
Yeah, they are.
That's our business, to help those companies get their legs here in the federal market. And we're seeing things that are just fascinating as a result of the new architectures.
Right.
You know, security, you know, within the hypervisor and things that we wouldn't have talked about 2 years ago.
Right.
Also, interesting concepts, this whole thing of putting all your eggs in one basket, you know, and is that a good thing? And I've gotten involved in lots of raging debates about that, you know? So not everyone thinks that it's a good idea,
I think all eggs in one basket, but have another basket that's available in case you need to move those eggs sometime, you know?
Of course, we definitely need the whole failover backup situation.
Sure.
But I do subscribe to the view that Dave expressed at the beginning here, where if we have things a little more concentrated and centralized, we can put our focus on it. And some of the technologies that are emerging now that actually see things happening in the data center and raise alerts so that the people can actually focus on real threats, things that we wouldn't have thought about threats before. You know, why did a file get encrypted but not move? Is that someone encrypting it to move it later?
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that we can do by putting lots of resources focused in one spot. So I think the cloud actually does bring us new opportunities. At least that's what the new technology companies are telling us.
Yeah, and new technology companies, when they talk to me, I tell them, you know, if you really need to focus on, if you've got a new technology, look at what problem it addresses and how it can perhaps reduce cost or do away with a lot of that legacy stuff and the old stuff and those high O&M costs. I think that's going to be a key going forward for new companies to break into the market, is to, you know, identify the savings that could be achieved by implementing those product sets. And so you did bring up a number of other benefits, and we are going to talk about those benefits in a show also. But first, we need to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
It happens millions of times every day. Cyber attacks aimed at the networks that are the brains and backbone of every government program and military mission. At Lockheed Martin, we understand the importance of cybersecurity. That's why we build security into every system we develop and integrate. Assuring that our customers can carry out their missions without disruptions is all a question of how. And it is the how that makes all the difference. Lockheed Martin, we never forget who we're working for.
Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows organizations to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle and evolve with changing cloud delivery models. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government. Find out how SafeNet's data-centric security solutions can work for your organization. safenet-inc.com/government.
Meet the future head-on. Be a part of a unique forum that will help you address your most critical data center networking challenges. Attend Brocade Federal Forum 2012 to learn how the latest IT advances can transform your data center into a strategic, powerful tool. Join other federal and industry experts August 21st and 22nd at the Ronald Reagan Building for this informative conference. Register today at brocadefederalforum.com. That's brocadefederalforum.com.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Dave Mihelcik from DISA, Adrian Gardner from NASA Goddard, Hayden Land from Lockheed Martin, Steve Charles from Immix Group, and Chris Ensie from SafeNet. We're talking secure cloud computing. When we went to break, we were talking a little bit about the security issue, and some people began to bring up some of the additional benefits. So let's talk about benefits. What are some of the key benefits that we see coming out? Let's start this time with Hayden Land over Lockheed. What are some of the big benefits you see coming by agencies moving to cloud environments?
One that just about everyone is experiencing is the fast, improved startup capability of development projects or initiatives. So being able to spin up an environment and respond to a mission request, I think, is what I'm hearing most of. We're also seeing an increased leverage of commodity applications being placed on cloud at a cost lower than the current approaches, you know, that have been used traditionally in the market. Thirdly, there is a dramatic partnership established between industry, academia, and government in supporting standards committees. We all are advocating the use of cloud, but we want to do it in a secure fashion. Right. So things like Tech America, the Open Data Center Initiative, NIST Working Groups, it's a wonderful environment that we collectively advance this area.
Right. Yeah. Standards, I would imagine, become a real opportunity as you move to cloud, because you're you know, again, all eggs, one basket. You can now make that basket look a lot more similar than it did in the past. Dave Mihelcik over at DISA, what do you see as some of key benefits other than the security thing we talked about being a potential opportunity and benefit? What are some of the other big benefits you think DISA will see coming out of this?
So for our customers, it's going to be efficiency, reduced cost, reduced total cost of ownership in terms of provisioning and operations. Effectiveness, we'll be able to bring applications to the warfighter much more quickly than we could before, not just with the underlying cloud computing capabilities, but with such things such as big data, persistent back-end stores of information that are accessible through those standard IDAM capabilities, as well as framework development methodologies. In the Department of Defense and the intelligence community, recently we've begun to standardize on something called the Ozone Widget Framework, which allows us to very quickly develop analytics and front ends so that users can access this big data in a very useful format. And, of course, we can never forget about security. And it's not just that we can make the cloud secure, but we can deliver security through the cloud. So some of the things that we're doing at DISA is offering email security gateway capabilities as a cloud from our customer's point of view. Basically, by just tying into the DoD backbone, the NIPRNet, they get these capabilities as part of that offering. So they don't have to focus on providing security gateways for web and email, et cetera.
Yeah, terrific. You know, I participated in a webinar just not long ago about the fact that where we're moving is to a world where decision making is going to be made when time equals zero. I mean, you're no longer going to be making, have time to think about decisions. They're going to be made like that, especially when you think with war fighters and terrorism and things like that, where there might not be time to make decisions. So cloud, clearly, the point you're bringing about the agility, the flexibility, the fast spin up that that Hayden mentioned, all are going to be big, big pieces of that.
Right, any data graphically displayed, any device, including commercial mobile devices.
Yeah, I like that visualization stuff, too. I think we're going to a world where everything's going to be visual. Adrian, what do you think? Some of additional benefits that come to mind that maybe haven't been mentioned here, or things that you see coming
at
NASA?
Yeah, I guess a couple of things. So one would be the engagement in the open source community. What we've done at NASA initially, we started with creating our own cloud platform, Nebula. Mm-hmm. We open source that with Rackspace through a Space Act agreement, and now created OpenStack. And I think that's a huge opportunity for all of us to sort of learn and learn from the open source community. So I think now you see a number of communities coming in to the cloud space that probably would have thought of in the past as sort of in the wild, but now right. They're becoming more commonplace. So you see more folks investing in OpenStack and Eucalyptus and building things on those and bringing them into a federal infrastructure. I think the next one for me really is looking at sort of bringing the desktop into the cloud, so virtual desktop infrastructures. That for me is a great opportunity, because then if you look at my environment, we have a huge number of foreign nationals that we on center and that we collaborate with over the wire. It creates an opportunity for us to secure the desktop at an application level,
right.
And then creating more ease of use and more ease of access to some of our partners. Not ease and access to everything,
right.
But ease and access to the things that they require. So
right.
Those are a couple of things that I would think of.
Yeah, and it's you mentioned the markets are so changeable, and I guess you probably witnessed this at Lockheed, players that ordinarily weren't in your space or in your space, and some that weren't in your were in your space are moving in other directions, and markets changing. I make the comment that I remember when Amazon sold books, and Google was a piece of search software. Yeah, Hayden.
Yeah, on that comment, energy efficiency, I think, also plays ideally in cloud deployments.
Oh, great point.
We have 39 regulated utility customers where we're providing energy efficiency services, and we're marrying that skill set with our cloud deployment, and we're starting to see agencies not only talk cloud, but in the same string of discussion, talk about their energy savings brought on by cloud.
Right. So you get energy savings, real estate savings, there's all kinds. It's getting to that end state in the tough budget, I think, is the challenge, because of that. It does take some upfront investment. What do you think, Steve, over at Immix Group? What are some of the big benefits that you're seeing or your clients are trying to achieve to help the government move forward?
Sure. Well, I would go back to our DHS cybercrime example, mm-hmm. where they were able to basically tear down 14 silos.
Wow.
And create a whole new environment just by shifting things, not spending a lot of new money. And they now are experiencing a whole lot more reliability out at the edge, mm-hmm. Constant service. And as a result, the agents are trusting this more. Mm-hmm. This whole thing of trusting our IT as a service, where we used to trust the fact that we had a server, 25 feet down the hall.
Right.
It's about trust that comes from years of continuous dial tone, mm-hmm. as it were. And that's what we're seeing now. And that's what's really, I think, going to accelerate this.
Right. I know Hayden brought up the idea of partnership. It does take a different way of looking at partnerships and service level agreements and shared risk between industry and government and so forth. So all very good points. Chris Ensie over at SafeNet, what are some of the big benefits you see by agencies going to cloud, and how are you positioning to sort of help achieve those benefits?
Well, there's certain operational efficiencies that are immediately gained. And it comes a lot from what I would say just be increased visibility. Mm-hmm. Some of the problems faced by many agencies, especially ones that are extremely large and have grown rapidly, new branches, new operations going on, they lose visibility into their architecture and what assets and IT that they have out there. And those legacy systems are still, to some degree, unknown. And moving into a cloud environment, the tools that are instrumented within the cloud provide a ton of different data about where your assets are. So adding that visibility into the picture really helps accelerate their ability to react to various different challenges within cybersecurity, as well as just maintaining their IT operations. The other area I'd say is very interesting is kind of this marriage of mobile and cloud. And as we see more applications come into cloud environments and be built to facilitate these digital natives and the other folks that are coming into the workforce, they expect to be able to access them on mobile devices. So
good point.
As mobile is interesting, it's only really that interesting when cloud's in the picture as well. So by bringing these two pieces together, we're really innovating, and we're seeing a lot more operational efficiencies within the government surface just by having those technologies in place.
Right, and dealing with the security at the mobility level and the interoperability. Absolutely. And the bandwidth and the auctioning of the spectrum and all those kinds of things are also interesting. We do a show specifically on those topics, but you're right, when you're talking cloud, the mobility thing's going to be right there with it, because we all know any of you who have kids know when the kids get there, they're going to expect everything right there to be immediate. So let's shift from all these wonderful benefits, and let's talk about the stuff that's hard to do, some of the constraints, the challenges, things that are difficult, because I've talked to lots of CIOs, and everyone sees sort of the light at the end of the tunnel, but to get to the rainbow, there's still a little bit of rain coming down you got to get through, and there's some issues that got to be addressed. Let's start with Dave at this. Dave, what are some of the tough things yet that you run into, the hard things to do to get to this new model?
So First of all, dealing with legacy applications is always a problem because CIO is going to look at cloud computing and immediately want to see an ROI. And the quickest way to get ROI is to take what exists today, shift it to a new infrastructure, and immediately save money. Unfortunately, there are always transition problems, so an investment is required to move legacy applications.
Right.
Greenfield applications can go immediately. Some other challenges, I would say, have to do with being able to build highly available applications in the cloud. Our traditional DISA data centers, the Defense Enterprise Computing Centers, are geographically diverse from one another. Unfortunately, where that's a benefit in terms of total disaster recovery, it's actually an impediment if what you want to build applications that can run in an active mode.
Right.
You need to have data centers that are within about 30 miles in terms of fiber distance so you can have instantaneous replication of data. So moving forward, we'll be looking at strategies that allow us to have near local active replication of data, mm-hmm. and then geographically diverse continuity of operation replication so that we can provide the user of the best of both worlds. Instantaneous access to the data despite local failures, as well as guaranteed long-term access even in the event of a natural disaster or kinetic attack.
Yeah, that mirror imaging things. I remember dealing with it back in my days, trying to make sure that we kept everything current on concurrent on both sites and so forth. That's back to my decision making when time equals zero kind of an idea, that how do you keep things, right at the current period of time. Adrian Gardner, how about NASA? What are some of the really tough things that you see happening, the difficult things that you encounter every day in trying to get to this new model?
Yeah, I guess I would say it's really basic, right? Adoption is one. I mean, just saying, is the organization ready to adopt? And finding those areas across your organization are sort of going to be the early adopters. And as a CIO, what we're trying to do is actually not sort of lead that, but let actually the customer sometimes lead that. Create the infrastructure, mm-hmm. make sure you validate the requirements with the customer, work in partnership with them hand in hand from inception all the way towards sort of a development and implementation approach. So that's what I think has worked well for us thus far, but we're really struggling with trying to now move that into the mainstream, right?
Right.
So we'll work on this little project, but now, when we want to go to the big bang of, really core mission, that's really now the next big step, I think.
Right.
So I think we're right at sort of the beginning of that.
Right. Does it require you to look at different governance structures? I mean, do you have some employees that are not really sure what this all means and those kind of issues?
Absolutely. I mean, so different governance structures and also giving them sort of other options. So, we've created sort of a virtualized test bed where they've been allowed to actually come in and play sort of with the cloud offerings that we have, test them out, sort of take them through their paces, much like they would do with their hardware that's sitting underneath their desk. So I think giving them those opportunities is huge from a standpoint of looking at the rate of adoption. Mm-hmm. I guess the other part of that is really looking at just the cultural issues. I mean,
right.
So they're going to be, at my center, I look at haves and have-nots.
Right.
I look at the cloud as an opportunity for the have-nots to kind of rise up to the same level as the haves.
Wow.
Right? And so kind of looking at those other parts of your organization
mm-hmm.
that don't necessarily have the big dollars that need the compute and the storage and the capabilities. And so looking at those cultural differences in your organizations
right.
and looking for those folks that are sort of in pain
right.
and saying that we have solutions for you that could move you up or ahead of where your counterparts are that have the big money.
Right.
And so looking at it from that perspective. So those are two ideas that I would offer.
Yeah, terrific. Well said. And we're now 80 for 80 on radio shows where the issue of culture being a challenge has come up in addition to technology and people and processes and whatever. Culture of agencies and just resistance in certain agencies based on, hundreds of years of culture that have built up and so forth. Let's jump down to Chris Ensie over at SafeNet. What do you see as some of the big challenges? And, are you adjusting? Do you have to reorganize the way you go to market with some things to help government customers now with cloud model out there?
That's a good point. So there's two areas I think that I pick out as the two challenges that surface from my perspective the most. One of which is from data governance perspective. I think our customers are trying to have to relearn how to do data governance within the cloud environment. It's more granular.
Right.
There's more layers to attend to. And I think it's just going to take some time before people get really good at being able to build that picture as they deploy. The other area I think is in the procurement of services. if you ever looked at the laundry list of different line items that are in the, you know, the menu of services you can buy from a cloud provider, it's very long and gets very complicated. So I think from a government perspective, as well as from a vendor perspective, we need to work together to kind of establish some marching orders as to how the best way is, the best way we can provide our services to the government and build, you know, contract vehicles and things like that that allow them to, you know, procure what we can offer and bring security to the table without having overly complex, procurement processes or anything else that comes
right.
with that.
Right. So. Yeah, a challenge that I'll mention, because maybe you guys don't want to mention it, but there's challenges for procurement and acquisition officials, because I think this is not the same old type of procurement that's been done in the past. It's going to take some creative thinking, some service level agreements that are going to look different, and it's a different model. So that there's a lot of challenge for the acquisition and, you know, procurement side of the house also to step up and rethink the way they do business. Hayden Land, what do you think, Lockheed, what do you see as some of the big challenges, the things that are you know, you're still in those hurdles you need to get over to get where you want to go?
Yeah, the ones I'm seeing, one is associated with the community cloud that we went online with in January for mm-hmm. federal agencies and the migration of legacy applications and data to that cloud can be challenging depending on whether what architecture they have in their current state. And we got to port their data applications to that. So I would say the migration from cloud type A to cloud type B is a challenging. Mm-hmm. Also, with the Shared First initiative, I see agencies looking to share data across their cloud, so interoperability. They're not going to change their cloud necessarily, so how do we communicate across cloud boundaries? Chris mentioned mobility. last year, only 4% of smartphones had security software installed at shipping time. Mm-hmm. So there's a risk area. As we extend our infrastructure out to the edge, we need to extend our security policy out to the edge. So right. cloud is key to that. And the last point I would say is catalogs. I'm having success with individual agencies. But when I try to do a shared catalog across multiple agencies, this gets a little challenging.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, that's one.
That's where that culture shift kicks back in there,
right.
too.
So those would be the four.
Yeah. And that security on mobile security is an interesting thing. I know SafeNet's been working that issue. And I think some of the first to the market that have a complete holistic solution are going to be received very, very well.
Many of the emerging companies are focusing on that.
Yeah. Steve Charles, Image Group, what do you see the big challenges and some of your clients are seeing as the major hurdles yet that need to be overcome to get to that end state?
Sure. Well, the technology manufacturers, software publishers, hardware companies have gotten used to previously selling things where the title transfers or the perpetual license is purchased. And now we're moving to this kind of everything as a service. Mm-hmm. And that requires different business models, different ways that the revenue comes in, different ways that sales people get compensated,
right.
different incentives. It's all about recurring revenue, keeping the customer happy and growing the customer, farming as opposed to the big game hunting,
right.
is a metaphor that I hear.
Right.
That is posing particular challenges for companies as mm-hmm. they need to basically run a dual stack financial model,
right.
you know, the old and the new, because this is a transition that's going to take, you know, years.
Right.
Many years.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. And the companies I talk to, they talk about the challenge. You know, managed service models really different for them. You know, people that are used to selling products agency to agency to agency, now we're talking about selling a product into a cloud provider. And then, you know, how do you price that? How do you, you know, is it a subscription basis? Is it, you know, how do you, how's that impact your revenues? All those questions become big challenges from the industry side. I know they're all working through them, too. I want to talk a little bit about private versus public versus hybrid. You know, over the years talking about cloud, I'm not sure in my mind I even can differentiate anymore sometimes what is the difference for that and shift to the future. But before we do that, we need to take another short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meet the future head on. Be a part of a unique forum that will help you address your most critical data center networking challenges. Attend Brocade Federal Forum 2012 to learn how the latest IT advances can transform your data center into a strategic, powerful tool. Join other federal and industry experts August 21st and 22nd at the Ronald Reagan Building for this informative conference. Register today at brocadefederalforum.com. That's brocadefederalforum.com.
Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows organizations to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle and evolve with changing cloud delivery models. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government. Find out how SafeNet's data-centric security solutions can work for your organization. safenet-inc.com/government.
It happens millions of times every day. Cyber attacks aimed at the networks that are the brains and backbone of every government program and military mission. At Lockheed Martin, we understand the importance of cybersecurity. That's why we build security into every system we develop and integrate. Assuring that our customers can carry out their missions without disruptions is all a question of how. And it is the how that makes all the difference. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Dave Mihelsik from DISA, Adrian Gardner from NASA Goddard, Hayden Land from Lockheed Martin, Steve Charles from Immix Group, and Chris Ensie from SafeNet. We're talking secure cloud. We've talked benefits. We've talked challenges. We've talked about some of the directions and strategies. And we hear a lot about agencies, some saying we're going to move some stuff into the public cloud. Some will say private cloud. Some will say hybrid cloud. Then I hear that, you know, well, is DISA kind of like the public cloud for DOD? Or is it like a private cloud for what, you know, those kinds of things. And how do you, Dave, you know, in your mind, distinguish what will be in a private cloud, public cloud, or some type of hybrid? And what does that kind of mean?
So I think moving forward, we're going to have multiple models in play. Currently, DISA is really an enterprise cloud provider for the Department of Defense. We operate these capabilities on-premise, oversight provided by government and military employees, and under the DOD's command and control structure. General Alexander at Cybercom is responsible for operation and defense of our networks. But moving forward, we believe we're going to have a strong role in something called Cloud Services Broker, where we'll meld public as well as off-premise private cloud offerings with our internal private cloud offerings and be able to offer our customers the services that best suit their needs. And I think you're going to see this trend growing across government and industry. There are some things that are best done on-premise for security or for performance reasons, but there are some things where you just want to take advantage of that lowest cost solution and get that data out into the public cloud.
Mm-hmm. Good. Because, you know, in my travels around town, we talk public-private. We're still talking, agencies still have not viewed public as being sharing equipment with another agency. There's like another whole leap there if you're going to now begin sharing a service with multiple agencies, or GSA for the civilian side, DISA for the DOD side, so to speak. Adrian, how does that, you know, as a lead-in there, how do you view private, public, hybrid?
I think we're already underway. We're already having a lot of those discussions, and actually DOD is in those discussions as well under DISA, where we're talking about getting all the agencies involved together to talk about this whole notion of a cloud service broker and moving from private clouds to public clouds, to hybrid clouds, and even to the open source community. So it's already really happening at its very impetus, I think, right now. We're at early on in that dialogue, but I think it's the right dialogue to have right now, where we're talking about how do we bring the requirements all in to one space and then begin to broker that across all of the agencies, both non-defense and defense. So I think it's already underway. So this, and that's, to me, again, it's an exciting time to be in. I mean, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's a lot of hard discussion, a lot of heavy lifting, if you will. But it's the right discussion to have, I think, at this point in time for the federal government to kind of engage in these early on discussions on how we're going to actually move agilely agency to agency and begin to use our services. So I think it's already happening. The other piece of it is, I think early on you brought up procurement. Procurement mm-hmm. is actually at the table with us, so that's a great thing as well, where we're learning together on how we would actually procure this and make it happen, if you will, and sort of one-stop shopping as far as looking at the acquisition strategy for these kinds of services. So I definitely think that, you know, I agree with my counterpart here, you know, David Dissa, that we've got to think about the whole diversity of cloud services and capabilities that we have, because it's going to take that in order to meet the needs of our agencies.
Right, but I do think you're right. I think the trend and the evolution is clear, that the shared services and agencies, because I think budgets and the tight fiscal climate that we're going to be facing, and the American people are going to start demanding these kinds of efficiencies. Yeah. So I think that's going to drive breaking down some of these culture barriers that have been in the way for so long.
Yeah. And I guess one more thing is just thinking about it from a standpoint of community, where you could begin to think about, when you talk about shared services, there are communities that automatically would sort of self-organize into like a USGS, a NOAA, a NASA, an EPA, which we would sort of share the same kind of security posture. And maybe it makes sense for us to kind of begin to sort of self-organize in that way to create those services across agencies.
Yeah, sounds great, man. I'm getting like this image in my head of like the Boston Red Sox and New York Yankees fan actually like going out together and having a drink, and or the Duke and North Carolina basketball teams actually hanging out together and stuff. Man, this is going to be good stuff. Hayden Land, Lockheed, what do you, in terms of Lockheed providing offerings, I guess you work with the customer to try to figure out what needs to be private, what could be shared, what could be hybrid, what could be public. How does a company like Lockheed, who's a major player in government IT, figure all that stuff out?
The cloud readiness assessment that I referenced earlier has a cloud decision matrix process within it.
Oh.
So that's the tool that we apply to help with that decision. My specific portfolio in civil is about 70% private, 25% community, and 5% public. Mm-hmm. The public-facing data is predominantly citizen-facing information. The private and the community clouds are more agency-based information. So that's been the balance that we're seeing. I see an uptick in going to hybrid. Mm-hmm. I see an uptick going to public. But you got to have that service broker that David and Adrian mentioned, and we do. We do have a functional production cloud service broker that manages all three of those environments and lets you move data in between them.
Mm-hmm. Steve, what do you think your experience working with your clients, how are they positioning for private, public, hybrids? To me, public, to me, the apps on my Android phone, are the epitome of a public offering. I get the sports score and see how my teams did, so forth. So there's clearly some things like that. But when we get to government, it gets to be a much more difficult decision as what can be in the public cloud, what's private, so forth. What are you experiencing?
Absolutely.
With
your client? It is the customer ultimately makes that choice. As a company that sells these technologies into all these environments, we're involved in all of them. Clearly, the big public cloud initiatives like email and so on get the headlines, but in our experience, the private clouds are getting the dollars. That said, that this idea of services across agencies and services from the private sector, this whole thing of service aggregation, service arbitrage, the brokering that we've been talking about, is something that we are working with a number of parties. And it strikes me that we have many kinds of actors in this new world. And it's going to require some interesting breakthroughs, mm-hmm. from fiscal law and appropriations on how this money's going to move around,
right
on down to contracting these many parties,
right.
So that we can deliver that trustworthy dial tone,
right.
As it were. So a lot of work to do, but we're just immersed in it, and ultimately it's project by project that is driving, that choice of hybrid.
Yeah, you brought a good point about dividing up that money as we get into these environments and shared services and things like that. It'll be a challenge for the appropriations committees, how money gets appropriated. And, the dialing for dollars process doesn't work, where you, try to get agencies to throw in their share and so forth. So I think there's going to be some challenges for the Hill to rethink the way they appropriate money for these kinds of shared activities. Chris, I want to hear from you, but I'm going to change the topic here. We're down to a little under 10 minutes to go in the show, and I want to really have some time for everyone to kind of make some comments about where you think this is all going in the future, where you see this, what is your vision for down the road as to what the government will look like as we implement these cloud offerings. What's your crystal ball look like? What's this going to mean for government down the road? What will changes will we see?
Well, I think you're going to see more composite applications developed, and I think it's going to be about information sharing and building clouds to support multiple enclaves of use. And some of that's going to take technology choice being brought into these environments, and some of those technologies are going to help us define and, you know, put some flexibility around how we set up flows of information sharing between different organizations. And what it, there's some challenges with that, right? I mean, we have to support the identity issuance and the credential issuance that'll support getting access to various different private clouds or hybrid cloud solutions. But I do see that kind of as an emerging trend when these cloud broker type of scenarios start to emerge. I also see that bringing in more flexibility for the actual cloud consumer. I could easily see as this market matures and the very new set of cloud service providers have all kind of gotten their business model straightened out, technology emerging as well that allows the cloud consumer to easily migrate across different vendors without having to necessarily re-architect their solution or even face an SLA change or a degradation of service. There's such flexibility and movement capability within virtualized environments that we could easily see a brokerage type of model where, you know, as price points change, as savings could be attained, they can move to a different service provider.
Great,
I mean, I could easily see that.
Yeah, refreshing way to look at it. Because sometimes, you know, I've heard the counter argument says, well, if you go cloud, you're locking yourself into. But in the future, I think you're right. I think there's going to be flexibility to move quickly.
Absolutely.
Steve Charles, what's it look like down the road for you? Where's this all going?
Sure. Well, I think we're still in kind of baby step mode here. Although we're doing very significant things, you know, in terms of the overall IT budget, it's still a very small piece. But I think that as we work through some of these issues, from fiscal law through procurement to how we actually implement these things, and we build trust, things are going to start accelerating. I don't know, 3 years from now, I think we'll really see a huge uptick. I think we will even 2 years from now. But I really believe that we're talking about a generational change here. We're talking about something that isn't flipping a light switch. We're moving these things application by application, mission area by mission area. And we're talking about sharing services across agencies, but I believe that to actually implement that, dealing with everything from fiscal law through procurement law through operational, we're really talking about a decade-long kind of transition. It's a new generation, and I'm happy that I have about 10 years left in my career to be part of it.
Good for you. You brought up 3 years and then a decade, and I agree with you. I think it takes about 3 years to get just about anything really done that's of any scale at all. And when I say done, I mean off and running and moving along. But it does probably take a generation of about 10 years where you actually get to full-fledged results of some of those ideas. Hayden Land, what do you see? What's it look like down the road to you?
I believe that the cloud computing foundation that we're putting in place today and in the past few years is really going to be instrumental to where big data goes, where mobility goes. I see cloud being the point of synchronization of those technologies and really enabling the mission enhancement, cost savings. It's going to take all three, not just the one. I'm also envisioning almost like a personalization or engagement-based cloud model of the future where agencies and corporations will almost have custom clouds for particular departments, legal, HR, business development, and the speed by which those can be adapted, I think, will dramatically improve. Lastly, I mentioned our global innovation centers, the one in the United Kingdom and the one in Australia. Cloud is really picking up in those areas, and I envision allies and the United States sharing cloud architecture, sharing data, much more so in the future.
Yeah, terrific. Some great comments there. Thanks, Hayden. Appreciate that. Adrian Gardner, how about NASA? What's your vision? I guess you're being the CIO. You need to think about the future.
Absolutely. So just a couple of things. One is, it's already been mentioned, is master data management in the cloud. I think that's going to become an opportunity, also a challenge. I think it's going to really be the thing that makes a huge difference in the way in which IT and services in general are viewed. The next thing I would say is think about business process modeling in the cloud. So we build a lot of things where factory infrastructure actually got it. So when we build satellites, if there was a way to virtualize the entire front end of that development process, I think that would be a huge benefit from the standpoint of the scientists and engineers on the center. We would fly, you know, technology that was potentially a third or second or third generation more fresh than we would if we actually built it on the hardware and then stage it forward. So I think looking at that whole project life cycle is huge. I think then the last thing is I think mobility is going to be the key. I think laptops are going to fall by the wayside, to be personally. Yeah. I think that it's going to be about mobile devices, and then cloud will give them access to their desktop real time. Now it'll be about securing that desktop in the cloud, but I think that's really going to happen.
Yeah, that mobile device, you maybe just plug it into like a docking station at work, and maybe if you want to have a bigger screen, whatever, and you won't even need a computer on your desk, and you won't need the laptops and so forth. Good point. Dave Mihelsik, what do you see? What's it look like in the future? Dave, you're the CTO at DISA, so you need to think big down there.
So how many hours do I have?
I think you got about a minute.
All right, so bottom line is cloud is going to do for computing what the Internet Protocol did for communications, and I cannot understate that. The Internet is the most important innovation of our time, and what cloud computing is going to do is take computing off the table. We're going to move from this environment of PCs and servers to an environment of just ubiquitous data and services that are accessible anywhere, anytime. It's going to bring huge benefits to not only the federal government, the United States of America, but the entire world. It's going to create new industries, and I think that the Internet really started about 50 years ago with experimentation at ARPA. We're at that infancy in cloud computing. We cannot even begin to envision the impacts it's going to have.
Yeah, terrific. You know, I did work on the reinventing government. I didn't take credit for creating the Internet. I do take credit for some wireless innovations, though. And I agree with you. The Internet was a dramatic change. But I also think once we get the broadband speeds and we get the connectivity and the mobility ubiquitous, and the speech, I think we haven't even scratched the surface of some of the things we're going to see in the future.
Well, absolutely. And I think the Internet of the future is going to be accessed through devices that we can't even imagine today. Google Glasses, if anybody's been reading about those, how we're going to have the computer embedded into our sunglasses, or how about direct neural interfaces? So the future is now, and I really look forward to
it. Yeah, cool. I'm exciting, too. And all right, let me close here by doing a few things. A few comments I'd like to make about, I wrote down as we talked. We talked about benefits coming, being better security, fast spin-up, efficiency, cost reduction, new levels of partnerships, more open source applications, visibility into architectures that we don't have today, all those things coming along as major benefits we'll see. Along with that comes the challenges. There's the investment challenge and the transition. How do we get from these legacy apps into these new modern environments? It takes some upfront investment. Are we going to get that upfront investment? How do we do it? How do you partner with industry to do that? There's going to be demands for high availability. When we put the things, all eggs in one basket, so to speak, now you got to make sure that you are still providing high availability to, you know, all your user base. The adoption and the governance structure, and of course the always challenging issue of culture and having agencies begin to adapt and actually see themselves doing things differently. I like information sharing. Composite apps is something that we talked about quite a bit, is something that's inevitable to evolve and come about. And I think if I had to summarize, you know, we said cloud plus big data add security, and you now are putting in place the foundation for the future. I kind of see it down the road, you know, agencies actually focus on agency mission, and IT becomes something that's a given. You don't need to worry about IT anymore. It's there, whatever you need. I want to thank, first of all, the panelists for taking time from your busy day to be here. Your comments were terrific, and I think you helped enlighten. One thing I like about the show is I feel like I get smarter because all these smart people come and talk in the show, and I get to listen to them. So thanks for sharing your comments and ideas. Thanks to the sponsors, without which we would not have a show. Thanks, of course, to Federal News Radio and all the good people here that do such a great job. And finally, thanks to the listening audience. You've been listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the 2012 Federal Executive Forum Series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This show was produced by the Trezza Media Group and the Fleizik Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.